Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the Catholic and Anglican leaders in England prepare to host a major international conference focused on the plight of Christians in the Holy Land. Hear from Archbishop Vincent Nichols and Archbishop Rowan Williams about the importance of keeping up our prayers and practical initiatives to support these struggling communities. And find out about an ecumenical charity that's been set up to fund small-scale projects for Christians in the land of Christ's birth. Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, and the Catholic Archbishop of Westminster, Vincent Nichols, are to host an international conference on the Holy Land next week, aimed at raising awareness of the plight of Christians there. The conference, to be held on Monday and Tuesday at Lambeth Palace in London, includes Anglican and Catholic bishops from many different countries, together with Jewish and Muslim delegates, who will stress the vital role that Christians continue to play in the land where Christ was born. In a video released on YouTube ahead of the conference, the Anglican and Catholic leaders in the UK explain why it is so essential to keep the spotlight on the problems of people in the Holy Land today. الضابط الخليقة
بأسرها. The rate of emigration from Christian populations in the Holy Land has been growing steadily for a long time. It's now really reaching a proportion where one can talk about a hemorrhage of Christian populations from there.
People are leaving, Christians are leaving, and we want to say the Christian presence in the Holy Land is important to its balance, to its, not just its historical reality, but to its presence and future viability.
We want Christians in congregations in this country, the sort of Christians who are likely to go on pilgrimage to the Holy Land, to have a fuller and better understanding of how critical the situation is for our brothers and sisters there.
The head of the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue, Cardinal Jean-Louis Torrent, will be representing the Holy See at the conference, while the delegation of Christian leaders from Jerusalem will be headed by Latin Patriarch Fouad Toual and Anglican Bishop Suhail Dawani. Vincent Nichols and Rowan Williams hope this important encounter will show the entire Christian community in the Middle East that their witness and their difficulties have not been forgotten by the churches worldwide.
A few years ago, I was back in the Holy Land for the first time for many years. I went with 100 people on a pilgrimage, and every single one of us came back saying, "What can we do?" Now, the nature of our pilgrimage was quite deliberate. We went not simply to the holy sites, but we went to see the Christian and the Catholic communities living around and in those places. So our response was a very person-to-person response. It was, what can we do to help these, our brothers and sisters, with whom we've sat and ate and drank and prayed?
I'd want to say to Christians in the Holy Land that we treasure enormously their presence and their witness, a witness which has gone on throughout Christian history, literally throughout Christian history, often in conditions of great trial and great stress. We value that. We see it as part of what we celebrate when we visit the Holy Land. We don't simply go to see the sites. We go to see living stones, as has often been said, to celebrate the witness that they offer. And we want them to know, therefore, that we give thanks to God for them, that we want their position to be strengthened, their presence to be supported.
This moment seems to be very opportune in which to hold a conference like this, because there is such a tension on the issues around the Holy Land, and I think an awareness that the struggle to find peace and a kind of at least a living pattern of cooperation there is really important for the stability of communities right around the world. There's something quite neuralgic about this central bit of the Mediterranean. So there's that wide public attention, but more importantly from the perspectives of this conference is the situation of the Christian communities there is very serious.
I hope that what will emerge from this is a much deepened awareness among Christians here of the situation of our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land. But not just awareness, also some possibilities of giving practical help and support. People need resources for education. They need the kind of resource that will allow them to invest for their future in the place where they are, that will give them hope and possibilities on the ground in the Holy Land. So we're hoping very much that there'll be concrete steps that people can take as a result of this. There'll be paths people can adopt to give that effective and practical support.
I hope this conference will let the voices of the Holy Land be heard, and therefore, in response to that, achieve a number of things. Greater understanding of the ordinary person's experience on the ground in the Holy Land. A willingness to respond to that experience and means by which that response can be challenged. So we will really be trying to give ourselves some priorities for the next few years in the practical ways in which we, the Christian communities here, can offer understanding and support to our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land.
Christians in the West, I think, need to be aware that the Christians of the Holy Land are an intrinsic part of our Christian family. That if they were not there pursuing that witness with the courage and consistency they always have, the whole body of Christ throughout the world would lose because of that. So it is important to stand with them, it is important to understand what they endure, and it is important to keep up our prayers as well as our practical support for them.
The message I would like to offer to Christians in the Holy Land is to say that we are with you in spirit and in prayer. We understand a little, and this conference will help us to understand a little more, the difficulties that you face, but also the courage and the depth of faith that you have. So we give thanks to God for your courage and your faith, and we want to say to you, that is an encouragement to us, and in response, we want you to know you are in our hearts and in our prayers today.
The voices of Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster and Anglican Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, who will be hosting a joint conference on the Holy Land in London next week. Amongst the organisations represented at the conference will be the small but growing ecumenical charity Friends of the Holy Land, which was set up precisely to provide very practical and personal support to Christians in Jerusalem and elsewhere around Israel and the Palestinian territories. Set up in 2009, the charity funds many small-scale projects, but also serves as an important link between parishes in the UK and churches in the Holy Land itself, an important source of moral support for Christian communities surrounded by their majority Jewish or Muslim neighbours. Projects currently being supported by Friends of the Holy Land include hiring local craftsmen to renovate dilapidated homes of vulnerable people and establishing and running a daycare centre for elderly widows in Bethlehem. Future projects will include supporting new small businesses to provide employment opportunities in areas such as olive wood carvings and the production of soap or wax candles.
The aims and objectives of that charity are first to raise awareness of the difficulties that Christians are experiencing in the Holy Land, to encourage and to provide for prayers to be offered for their intentions, and only thirdly, to generate financial support to them to aid their well-being.
Dr. Michael Whelan is founder and national UK chairman of Friends of the Holy Land. He also serves on the general council of another charitable organisation, the Equestrian Order of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre, that dates back centuries to the days of the Crusades. During my most recent visit to Jerusalem, I sat down with Dr. Whalen to find out more about the history of this ancient order and the focus of these fundraising organisations today.
The order does date back to the Crusades. Godfrey de Bouillon was the leader of the First Crusade, and his records, his sword and spurs, are still held within the Holy Sepulchre Church in Jerusalem. He led the Crusades after some 200 years. The Knights left the Holy Land and largely were semi-dormant in Europe until 1847, when the Pope re-established the Patriarchate of Jerusalem, and he reconstituted the order and gave it the responsibility of supporting the Patriarch of Jerusalem. So since 1847, we have been a structured group of people, essentially providing finance and support. It has had its constitution modified by various popes. At one time, the Pope was the head of the order, but now it is assigned to a cardinal. And there is then a committee, the Grand Magisterium, which sits in Rome, and the Patriarch of Jerusalem is the Grand Prior. The order has some 40 to 50 lieutenancies around the world. In small countries, it is normally one lieutenancy, but for the USA, it will have four or five lieutenancies to cover the large geographical area. The numbers in a lieutenancy range from 30 to 40 in the very small ones, to 1,500, 1,700 in some of the very large American or Canadian or Italian lieutenancies. And each lieutenancy is essentially independent, but does operate under the jurisdiction of the Grand Magisterium. And together they provide something like $8, $9, $10 million a year into the Holy Land to support the schools, the parishes, humanitarian aid and projects, and the Latin Patriarchate.
Some would say that for the 21st century, the military connotations, if you like, harking back really to the origins, to the Crusades, is entirely inappropriate. How do you respond to that?
To a large extent, the only thing that we hold from those very early days is the regalia, the cloak, and the pilgrim shell that members of the order receive from the Patriarch when they make a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. We have lost or abandoned or moved away from many of the historic, traditional elements of an order. There are some that still exist. You come across them in various parts of the world where they are still trying to relive the 15th, 14th, 13th century. We moved a long way from that, and our constitution is very clear in that respect. But we do retain the regalia, and it is quite interesting that when we come to Jerusalem, we will wear the regalia and have a special reception into the Holy Sepulchre Church, which the Franciscan community organise. It's called a solemn entry, and that perhaps is the only thing that really dates back to the occasion when a new set of knights would arrive from the UK, and there would be a great celebration and a singing of the thanks be to God that a new set of knights had come, so maybe the old ones could go home. But that is really the major traditional element, other than some formalities over the investiture of knights. I mean, by comparison, England has a formal process when they invest knights of the land, of the realm, and we have a similar procedure, although in England we are not allowed to dub the knights on the shoulder. That is a prerogative of the Queen.
As you say, you're providing a lot of money, a lot of support to the church here in the Holy Land. What would you see as the major needs today, the area where you can be most effective?
The area that we are doing most of our work in is that of the education of the Christian community in the schools. if we have educated Christian people, then we're giving them the opportunity of taking a major role in the running of their country in the fullness of time. We know that by educating them, we provide them an opportunity to emigrate, but if the circumstances are such, they would wish to emigrate in any case. But in a recent visit to Jordan, when we had the privilege of meeting the King of Jordan through one of the bishops' conferences, he said that whilst the Christian community constituted some 3%, 4%, 5% of his country, in the administrative ranks, they were operating as some 24%, 25%. So they were very dependent on members of their administration who had been educated to a good level within the patriarchate schools. And perhaps this is an aspect that some people may not appreciate, that for the Christian community to be fully recognized, it does need to take a major role within the administration and organization of any country in which it's represented.
You're working amidst all kinds of difficulties here, aren't you? Largely due to the ongoing conflict between Palestinians and Israelis.
We are. Every time we come, we see a difference, and usually it is a negative difference, an impact on the lives of the Christians. We have, since the year 2000, certainly England and Wales, has made a point of visiting the parishes and the people and arranging a social evening when the locals can enjoy a meal and a conversation and a discussion with the knights that have come over. And that has been continued to a number of the diocesan pilgrimages that have taken place in recent years, because it does build bridges between the peoples of the two countries. And it is very easy to think of the Holy Land as a group of holy places which one visits on pilgrimage, but the true value out of making a pilgrimage is often stated as meeting the people, the holy people of the Holy Land rather than the holy places of the Holy Land.
You're encouraging people to come here to meet with the people. What do you think perhaps people coming on pilgrimage can learn from here? What is the greatest gift perhaps that you take back home with you after meeting with the church here?
The point that has been raised a number of times by others and myself within the pilgrimage group is when we've joined in a parish mass on a Sunday morning, the sheer pleasure on the faces of the people to see that there are others who've come to join with them, to pray with them, to share maybe just a few hours of their life. But they're not isolated. And it has been said to me that one of the biggest memories the pilgrims take back is the recognition by those over here that there are others that think about them, care for them, pray for them, and are prepared in small numbers to come over and join with them in their services. We took a photograph of a young lady in the choir in Bet Jala Church 2 or 3 months ago when we were over here. She looked so happy and just singing lustily, beautifully. And we happened to ask her afterwards, why was it that you were so happy during Mass? And she said, with all of you here, I just felt there was a joy and a celebration, and I just had to give of my best. And so she was getting something out of it, and we got a lot out of it.
There does seem to be a growing realization here that the churches, that the Christian community must help itself. Do you share that feeling?
I do. I've had lots of discussions with people about why do we just give money, which is spent, and then tomorrow they need more money to spend. And I'm encouraged, certainly in the three parishes in the Bethlehem area, where I've had some experience recently, that they are setting up St. Vincent de Paul groups, they're setting up parish support groups, where those that are fortunate to have some monies either historical monies or from professional fees and salaries, they are prepared to help those within their own parish. And we are far happier helping somebody who is doing their best in a small way to help themselves rather than just be seen as handing out largesse as we go around.
On the tourism front, there are increasing concerns, aren't there, about the wall and the continuing difficulties of the Palestinian people, the difficulties for pilgrims who come to Jerusalem to be able to get into Bethlehem or the surrounding areas.
That's quite a wide subject. My experience is that this is more in the minds of the people who are organising the pilgrimages, who are perhaps doing it for their own benefit. We have been into Bethlehem, stayed in the hotels in Bethlehem, eaten meals in Bethlehem, and enjoyed meeting people in Bethlehem on every pilgrimage, especially where we have spent 2 or 3 days within the city of Bethlehem. I think it is false information to say Bethlehem is dangerous, it doesn't provide the facilities, the support. Just go in, go and have a look at the Church of the Nativity, go and look at Shepherd's Field, and then come out again and stay overnight in Jerusalem. I think that is part of the problem of the travel agents, who perhaps find it easier. They can organise things better if they have their group staying within a largely Israeli group of hotels in Jerusalem and do not take the trouble to find out what really is possible if they were concerned about supporting the Christians in Palestine.
Do you find that the political situation is increasingly encroaching upon the work that you do overall?
It's not encroaching on the work we do, other than the difficulties possibly of bringing groups into the country. But it is interesting that in a recent report to aid the pilgrimage situation, the Israelis said they were training 200 of their own guides to be able to take pilgrimage groups into Bethlehem. That by implication means that they would be taking the business of the Bethlehem guides, who at the moment do gain a little from all the groups coming in. So there is a general move, and it is associated with the social and political moves that are taking place in Israel. There's a general move to transfer the revenues and the activities of pilgrims into the hands of the State of Israel and Israeli organizations. Again, making it harder for the Palestinian groups to gain an income.
Do you find that on the whole, over in the UK and perhaps in other areas, in other countries where the order is present, that there is a great ignorance about the political situation, about the social and economic conditions here?
There's a great lack of information, lack of understanding. And that's why, separately from the order, we have just established a charity called Friends of the Holy Land. And the aims and objectives of that charity are first to raise awareness of the difficulties that Christians are experiencing in the Holy Land, to encourage and to provide for prayers to be offered for their intentions, and only thirdly, to generate financial support to them to aid their well-being. So awareness is a huge problem at the moment. There is very little real understanding of the situation over here. There's very little in the public press that gives the detail of what is happening. You have to read between the lines of a closure here, a closure there, a rerouting of a checkpoint, a re-establishment of the rules and regulations for the Christians travelling, even pursuing their own businesses, for instance, the tour guides and the coach drivers. Little by little, there is an encroachment on their freedom of movement, which unfortunately is lost to the general public and to the world at large.
You're hoping to establish a branch of this Friends of the Holy Land organisation in every parish, every Catholic parish up and down the country, aren't you? How can people find out more about it?
Yes, we believe there are many, many people in many, many parishes who would make a small contribution to the work of the Holy Land. We have a website, www.friendsoftheholyland. We give information there as to the work we do, how they could contribute, some of our projects, some of the opportunities we see, ways in which they can contribute in a variety of alternative activities. And we will, in the course of time, start running pilgrimages to the Holy Land to actually enable people to see where their money is going, what it's being spent on, and in that way encourage them to take a greater care and appreciation of the situation over here. To have a lady sitting, old lady, sitting in her bedroom every evening with water dripping through the roof each time it rains, and the inability, lack of a husband or son to do something practical, or lack of money to have it done for her, to have the roof repaired. It makes a huge difference to her life to have a small thing put out of the way so that then she has got a dry room for the future. We have recently run a number of small building projects which have addressed relatively small issues in various houses, but have brought a wealth of support, happiness to the individuals concerned, as well as providing an income for the plumber, the decorator, the plasterer that we've employed. Another major work that's carried out recently was the establishment of a small daycare centre for elderly ladies. It just takes them 1 or 2 days a week, but it enables them to leave the house, to enjoy the company of others, to have a meal together, something that they had not done for years. It did not take a lot. It was down to the initiative of a young lady in Bethlehem who felt, in her own particular case, she was leaving her mother in the morning at 8 o'clock, coming back at 5 o'clock in the evening, and her mother would not have seen anybody, spoken to anybody. And once you are past the age of 75, 80, being part of a community and being wanted becomes a major part of your life.
My thanks there to Dr. Michael Whalen, former Lieutenant of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre in the United Kingdom and currently member of its General Council based here in Rome. He also helped to set up in 2009 the ecumenical charity Friends of the Holy Land, which you can find online at www.friendsoftheholyland.org.uk. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Don't forget you can find all our news and feature programmes on the internet. Look us up at www.vaticanradio.org/English. Thanks for listening, and do be sure to join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.